Buying pants shouldn't take this much effort. Too many options, inconsistent sizing, and styles that don't work across your day. You want something comfortable, sharp, and reliable without guessing, returning, or buying five different pairs. That's why there's Jack Archer.
Ah, yes. JackArcher.com simplifies everything with the Jet Setter Tech Pant. One versatile pair designed to take you from work to weekend without missing a beat. Easy to wear, easy to style, and easy to shop for. The Jet Setter Tech Pant is wrinkle-free, stain-resistant, and built for all-day comfort. They stretch, breathe, and hold their shape, giving you a consistent fit and polished look every time. Backed by thousands of five-star reviews, they're the dependable pants you'll reach for daily.
Jack Archer, ready when you are. For a limited time, get 15% off your first order with code GETJACK at jackarcher.com. Again, that's promo code GETJACK at jackarcher.com for 15% off your first order.
You're a pro at running your life, at committing to your workout, at showing up every day. At Bombas, we're pros too. Pros at making socks. Our sport assortment has specialized socks for whatever sport you're committed to. Running, hiking, golf, Pilates, and so much more. Made with sweat-wicking yarns, blister-fighting details, and targeted arch support. Bombas Sport is pro-level socks from the pros of socks. For another pro, you. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code audio for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com and use code audio.
It's Draymond Green, kicking off my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast. And trust me, I'm not holding back. Listen to the Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I don't think Michael's ever done drugs.
It's Mike Shope.
I don't know if anyone's ever offered him any.
Let's go over some of the symptoms of marijuana use, shall we? You tell me who this sounds like.
It's the Bulldog.
Slow moving. Inattentive. Dull. Constantly snacking. Shows a lack of motivation.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog on WGR Sports Radio 550.
Some might find it a little early to call it draft season. Guys, at least get us to the combine. I'll hang up and listen. That's next week anyway.
We're though, late so. In the week leading up. We're leading up to the combine. I don't know. I feel like I feel like my feet are firmly planted in draft season. That's what I feel like.
Yes, and I'm with you. Now, you and I, however, are not 12 months a year draft season feet are planted, guys.
No,
really,
sir.
The season has to end first.
That's why we
the football season.
That's why we have phone numbers.
That's why we call our friends, including the man with us now on the Western Hotline, Cody Carpentier. It is Cody Carpentier season, isn't it, Cody? Come on, this is what a time to be alive.
This is the best time of the season. This is my favorite time of the season because this is draft season. And you know, a lot of people say, "Oh, it's the off season." You know, you go out and see some friends, like, "Oh, you're relaxing?" No, we're not relaxing. We're talking about the drafts. We're talking about prospects. And like you said, the combine's 4 days away. We're going to be in Indianapolis, boots on the ground. So I appreciate you guys having me on, as always.
Yes, our pleasure. RosterWatch.com for some of Cody's rankings. You've been around, I think, a lot already in this. Off season, going back to the Senior Bowl and more. Tell us a little bit about what you've been doing here on the grind.
Yeah, I mean, that's the official launching off point, I guess, of draft season post-NFL regular season is the Senior Bowl down in Mobile. A lot of prospects down there we got to get eyes on. And then really got back home and stayed tight. I didn't go to the Shrine Bowl for the first time in 3 years. Happy I didn't do that. I was in Dallas because there's a couple people that got kind of trapped in Dallas during that big weather storm. Yeah. Didn't make it to Mobile. But yeah, came back home and just been grinding through prospects, trying to get all the combine guys done by Monday so I could feel like I'm in a good place. I'm almost there, but not quite. But we're getting there, and then we'll be at the combine next week, all week, and then we'll come back home, and it'll be pro day season, and then we'll be boots on the ground. I'll go to Clemson, Georgia, South Carolina, kind of stay in my region a little bit. And pro days, and then we're off to the NFL draft in Pittsburgh.
that's it, summed up right there.
Like we've already established, you're working on this all year round. How much does you said you didn't go to the Shrine Bowl, but the Senior Bowl, all of it, the combine, the workouts. Like, how do you feel about the impact that that has on players rising and falling and whatever it is. Do you feel like the tape that you watched, or the guys that you watched in person in the fall, in the winter, should weigh more, or do you get swayed by the workouts?
Well, I think that's a little bit of both. It's a lot of repetitions. Like, I'd be lying to you if I told you the first time I went to the Senior Bowl, the first time I went to the Combine, that I knew exactly what I was doing, looking for, right. What to ask, what, you know, everything, right? And right. And even, like, this would be my fifth year at the Combine, is my fifth year at the Senior Bowl, and I've been going with Alex Dunlap, who's been going for 15 years with Roster Watch. And, you know, you learn new things every year. And I think the biggest part is really just combining everything. It's not about just like, okay, I watched the tape on this guy during the season. You know, he had a bad game against Rutgers. He had a good game against Ohio State. He had a good game here, a bad game here. And putting it all together and finding what a guy does good, what a guy can learn, what a guy can't do, what a role is for that player. And then you kind of combine that experience and that production with the physical traits, how big is he, how fast is he, how strong is he at the combine. And then you have the personality side, which is really what I enjoy the most out of the Senior Bowl and the most out of the combine, is even though it's not like we get to sit down with these players for an hour apiece, it's you get to go up, you get to watch them interact with media members, interact with players on a day-by-day basis, have conversations with them, kind of get an understanding of kind of how they work and what their goals are and different things like that. And you just kind of combine all these things together to kind of create the full picture for you and not just go, you know what, this guy ran a 4.2, I'm drafting him, because that hasn't exactly worked out for a team in the center of the United States with a really fast wide receiver quite yet. And generally it doesn't work out exactly like that perfectly, you know. So I think it's just about the whole picture, and that's really what I've learned the most, I guess, over the last 5 or 6 years.
Really good. Cody Carpentier, our guest, rosterwatch.com, for his most recent rankings, top five by position. We're obsessed over wide receiver here every year this time of year, Cody, and that's partly because a lot of us don't think the Bills have tried hard enough to get better at that position. So we go into this draft, and it's more the same. Pick 26. One player that we've talked about a little bit early for us again is Casey Concepcion, because he's not going to be, probably, maybe this will change, but He's not thought of generally as one of the top two or three in most of what I've seen. You have him second, though, so you must be a fan.
Yeah, so that's the, you know, I was listening to you guys for the last half an hour, and I appreciate the, you said it was a, this is a compliment, but you know, how I can sometimes have a little bit of a take.
Yes.
And the Concepcion thing is interesting to me because, you know, and part of it, like I said, getting eyes on these guys in person a little bit different than tape. I have my concerns with other guys in the class, namely, I guess, Mekhi Lemon, the guy at USC that won the Biletnikoff Award from USC. And these are two players that are very close in type, in that they can both play slot and they play on the outside in college. And the dynamism level of tackle breaking between Mekhi Lemon and Casey Concepcion, I see more outside play from Concepcion. And for those Buffalo fans, my literal comp for Casey Concepcion was none other than Stephon Diggs. It's a guy that fits that mold, and that tree of comps for me is the Zay Flowers, Stephon Diggs, Antonio Brown. That's kind of that tree where it's a guy that's thought of as a slot, but has the alpha mentality. The new age alpha is what I call it, whether it's the Malik Nabers, the Jamar Chase, the Browns, the Antonio Browns, the Stephon Diggs, that whole realm of these new age guys. And that's a lot of what Concepcion brings to the table, and why I've vaulted him ahead is I'm a little worried about some things. I don't want to talk negative about Mekhi Lemon or anything, but I'm worried about some things with him. The overall profile of a Jordan Tyson, been injured 3 consecutive seasons at Arizona State, transferred out of Colorado to there. Not completely sold on Denzel Boston. So among that top five group, Casey Concepcion was the one that kind of stepped up for me so far through the process. And that can, of course, change next week when I go and talk to him in person and watch him run routes in person and we grade all that stuff at the combine. But outside of Carnell Tate, I enjoy Casey Concepcion quite a bit. He's just an outstanding acceleration guy that can punish on routes downfield, elite short area footwork, like just everything I look for in a guy that can play both inside and out. And honestly, in my last mock draft, Buffalo is exactly where I put him.
You know, I meant it when I said I meant that as a compliment, by the way, because there are so many guys doing what you do. And it's easy to sort of, who even knows? I mean, I don't mean this negatively toward any specific person, but you can kind of make a list off other people's lists. And right. Boom, here are my rankings. But I know that you're not like that, and that's what I meant.
Of course.
With Cody Carpentier. So it sounds like a little bit of this is your, as you said, softer on maybe not just Lemon.
Well, Tyson's got the injury thing. We've heard that from other people we've talked to here. We've only had probably, you know, three or four of these conversations so far, Cody, but that's come up every time we've gotten to the receivers. Not that we spend a lot of time on the guys that are way up at the top of the rankings like Tyson is, but I wonder, maybe you're suggesting, and maybe this will become a thing once the medicals get looked at the combine and everything, that this is a guy that, as highly rated and productive as he's been, might be a faller when we get to, you know, into the process more.
100%. That's been one of the topics of conversation. And, you know, my buddy Alex Dunlap that works with me at Roster Watch has always coined the phrase, the draft is a flat circle. And that meaning is that generally, you know, we've kind of closed off the beginning of the circle. The beginning of the NFL draft ethos conversations begins in about November. And then by the time you get to post-combine, early March, you're in never-never land of these conversations where it's like, oh, this guy is falling to the round two. And then all the way till you get to the draft, the week before you go, the draft is a flat circle, Jordan Tyson's right back up into the top 10. Right. And so that's kind of the thing you have to process through in your mind is that this guy does have a very strong background. His brother plays in the NBA. I think his brother or a cousin is a coach at a high level in college football. And it, like, if you just watch Jordan Tyson, it's not that hard of a sell for you right now. And it's really, the injuries are the number one worry. Like, it's not far fetched to see Justin Jefferson type, Terry McLaurin type play in Jordan Tyson's profile. He's deserving of that top 10, top 12 projection and a draft pick up there by, you know, whether it's the Saints or the Chiefs or the Commanders or whatever. Like, he is deserving of that type of draft capital. But, yeah, the main thing with Tyson really is just, again, year over year, the injuries, and that's a, you know, it's a big thing. So there's going to be a lot of questions about a couple of these quarterbacks in the medical testing as well, but Tyson's going to be one of them. I'm not too worried about what that looks like. For me, it's just at the wide receiver position especially, it's how can I be less wrong about a player? And that's worked a long ways going back to, you know, one of my favorite classes of just the receivers in that conversation was Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave. You knew you were not going to miss drafting Chris Olave. It was not hard. You knew he was going to hit. You knew he was going to be a dependable wide receiver. Now, you can't always predict concussions and stuff. It's whatever. But some of these guys, I feel better about Concepcion. I feel great about Carnell Tate coming out of Ohio State, even though there's questions about, well, he wasn't the number one. You know, he was a number two for multiple years. And Emeka Egbuka, this first-round pick. And Jeremiah said that maybe the best wide receiver we'll see, you know, minus 10 years, plus 10 years. All right, so there's these different things that create a bunch of these different profiles differently. And all these wide receivers are different in the top five here, but yeah, I really like Jordan Tyson. I think there's just a lot of question marks that come with that injury side of the conversation.
Yep. With Cody Carpentier, the Bills, as you may have heard us talk about also earlier today, Cody, 23 UFAs, plus a few seemingly close to obvious cut candidates based on salary cap stuff, might include Taylor Rapp. A lot of this is on defense. And, you know, you're not just only scouting wide receivers, obviously. How is the edge rusher class? I've heard good things. And how do you sort of see it, the Bills picking late in the first round again like they do? How might they best want to allocate their draft capital with different positions in mind?
You know, it's very interesting. I didn't realize how beat the Buffalo defense was from a free agent perspective until I looked at it like earlier this week while I'm putting together some of our draft charts. And I think it's interesting. I've always kind of looked at it, and I was like, well, Joe Brady's he took over as the head coach now. Like, they're going to, for sure, you know, he's going to be pounding the table to correct this thing and draft a Concepcion, or if one of these other guys falls, great. And then I'm like, well, actually, and you know, it's interesting you bring up Edge. Edge is phenomenal. Last year there was 13 edges drafted in the first three rounds. This year there might be 14. It's a phenomenal edge class, and that's counting Arvell Reese. You can throw him in there as well. Obviously it's projected to be a top three pick from Arizona State, but it's a supreme edge class that will allow you to, you know, use a second or a third round pick on an edge and not have to force your hand and maybe potentially reach for a guy like Akeem Mezitor or R. Mason Thomas at the end of the first round when you really don't want to. Interestingly enough, it really just depends on the angle they want to go. I guess I've not fully fledged into each team-by-team breakdown of how I perceive the draft is going to roll out, but one thing that I question about Buffalo is, will Bean continue to press the button at corner? Like, will he make that a point, right? They go out and they I don't know. I'm not sure. Like, bring back Tre'Davious White, bring back Darius Slay last year. It's like, are they going to continue to push this button early in the draft? Because in this class, it's fine at corner at the top. It falls off really quickly, and that worries me about that. I wouldn't be the first direction I would go. I'd be looking at Anthony Hill out of Texas to come in and play linebacker, play that Milano role. I'd be looking, I guess you could potentially look at guard if that's the kind of direction that if a guy like a Caden Proctor falls and becomes a value, people see him as an inside-outside guy. I think he can play left guard very well, especially next to a guy like Deion Dawkins, who's, you know, I wouldn't say overweight, but has had to control his weight through his career.
Dawkins himself said he thought he was overweight in 2025, didn't he?
Well, he said he's coming back lighter. He's going to try to sort of reinvent himself, I think.
And that's something that Proctor, I think on a podcast about a year ago, said he was about 400 pounds as a sophomore in college, and now I think he's down to 365. I hope he comes into the combine next week in the 350s, but he's a guy that really needs to control his weight too. So it's like, I think that situation could work well, having a veteran right next to him and plugging him in that guard and maybe lighten him up and potentially move out to tackle after Dawkins, you know, moves on in the future. But I think there's a lot of different directions this Buffalo team can go, and I don't think edge is at tippy top just because that there is depth and there is a, you wait to the third round and you get a true mashed potato guy or meat and potato guy like Jayshon Barham out of Michigan, who's 6'3", 250 and really just kind of overlooked and fits into that defense very well. I love Joshua Josephs out of Tennessee as well. We're talking about third round guys with, you know, high motors, not a lot of production, I guess, at the college levels, what you say, but guys that are going to be physically impressive. And you'll see that next week. And they kind of just fit what I've always looked at as, in this Buffalo defense as, you know, grinders, like guys like Matt Milano, guys like Terrell Bradford, guys like the thing with Anthony Hill, and I'll circle back to this, Anthony Hill will remind a lot of people of Tremaine Edmonds. And I think that would be a phenomenal pick. And he's a guy that will go top 40, top 45 at the University of Texas. But people are getting sour on him, but he's going to go to the combine next week, and he's going to run the low 4.5s at the linebacker position, 6'3", 240 pounds. He can command a defense, wear the green dot, and he's a true leader on the defensive side of the football. So I think there's multiple, you know, directions they could go, whether it's receiver, left guard with a Proctor, linebacker with a Hill, but I don't think they should go corner again.
Yeah, I certainly hope they don't. I mean, they have Hairston, you know, hopefully healthy, and Christian Benford, so the need is not as glaring as it was a year ago. Cody, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the edge position, defensive end. I realize that there's differences in how those players are used, but I'm wondering about, like, I have in my head, and this might be trouble, the idea that, like, edge guys, 6'5", 275, can, you know, bend and get around the corner, right? And I think so much now is predicated on how quickly you can win, not just winning your rep, but winning it quickly. And I feel like there's been some guys, Benito maybe comes to mind in Denver, that aren't like the stature, but they're explosive athletes, and they are just going to get through you some way, somehow. And I wonder if you're seeing like a different type of player highly rated at pass rusher now because of that.
Well, I think you have your different types, right? Obviously, the AJ Epenesa, Greg Russo, Landon Jackson type of being 6'5", 6'6", and 270 is its type. It's your standard strong side defensive end that can kind of hold up. It should be good in the run game. And I guess the tweener in between that and your pure pass rusher like a Joey Bosa at his prime is kind of like that Danielle Hunter, who can play both the run and the pass game at an elite level. But there's definitely a grip, I guess would be the best way to put it, a grip of guys that fit the mold you talk about and that are pure third down, get after it, pin the ears back. And they can play a little bit of run down, but it's not their feature. Like, you look at Cassius Howell at A&M, who's 6'2", probably going to be 6'1", and some change, 248, who was a menace in a couple of games last year for Texas A&M. R. Mason Thomas, I mentioned him a second ago from Oklahoma, and these are second and third round category guys for me. R. Mason Thomas reminds me a lot of Hassan Reddick coming out of Temple, a guy that, you know, double-digit sacks multiple times through his career in the NFL, but he's 6'2", 249. The guy I talked about a minute ago, Joshua Joseph, 6'3", 240. These are guys with high motors, but that are smaller, and they don't fit that prototypical strong side defensive end mold that I guess Buffalo fans are especially used to seeing in like a Russo or an Epinesa or even Landon Jackson this last year. So there's a mold, and then there's the tweener, right? I think that mold we're talking about right there was Keldrick Falk this year coming out of Auburn. He's the best strong side defensive end in this class, 6'6", 285. He's a monster. But there's a lot of guys that fit that 6'3", 250, 245 that can really burn off the edge, and that begins at the top with David Bailey out of Texas Tech, who's almost certainly going to be a top five pick.
I don't want to burn all of the time we have left on Landon Jackson, but season undone by injury. Before he got hurt, he wasn't even getting a uniform on game days. It seemed like there was going to be a long learning curve. What sort of prospect was he to you last year?
Landon Jackson is an interesting one because I also cover the Texas Longhorns for Orange Bloods, and his younger brother, Lance Jackson, was a five-star prospect coming out this last year. So we got to talk a little bit to Landon a couple of years ago coming up when he was at Arkansas at the SEC Media Days. And this, he's a, first off, great human, but very technical, very intentional, very creative, and a guy that sort of fits that tweener, more of a run defense guy. But when you talk to some of these offensive tackles in the SEC going through, he was a problem. And that's one of the, you know, you talk about going in person to these events and stuff, like learning from not only your eyes or coaches, but talking to an offensive tackle and you say, you know, who is the most difficult guy you went against this year? And it's like player after player after player goes, Landon Jackson, Arkansas, Landon Jackson, Arkansas, Landon Jackson, Arkansas. So like that type of a guy is obviously a big thing in there, but he added a lot of weight at Arkansas. Very long. I think he had like 34 and some change inch arms. Super long defender that can play in the run game and get after the quarterback. And he actually, I remember the game against Alabama a couple years ago, he absolutely demolished that offensive line. And just a good, fluid player. I don't think he's ever going to be an all pro per se, but I think he can definitely fit in kind of like that number two strong side defensive end role and occasional passing down work on the opposite side.
Cody, last thing in maybe 2 minutes, if you don't mind, the quarterbacks. So we've got the 101, and then is anybody else day one? Can you see some number of these guys succeeding in the league?
Man, I got done with quarterbacks a couple of days ago, and I really came away with my number one takeaway after Mendoza, who I'm not the biggest fan of, but like I think he can be a really solid, especially now with Kubiak in Vegas, a really solid Goff level, Purdy level controller of the game, like a Kirk Cousins level, right? After that, though, there's some projection in Ty Simpson that he needed another year at Alabama. Everybody knows that, so hopefully he can get another year, you know, in Los Angeles or something. But after that, you know, I love Cole Payton of North Dakota State, but after that, it's a bunch of dudes that will just be career twos, and I mean that respectfully to all of them, whether it's Sawyer Robertson from Baylor, Luke Altmyer from Illinois, Nussmeier from LSU. There's 6-7 dudes that you look at and you go, that dude's going to be in the league for 8 years. He might start 5 games. But he's going to be really good at being a number two because he's very intelligent.
Yeah.
He's got a good enough arm. He's a good enough athlete. His pocket presence is at a adequate level, but he's a, you know, fourth, fifth round pick. He's a solid football player for most teams that can sit behind these. That's the problem with this entire class. You know, we were let down quite a bit by Drew Aller and Carson Beck and Cade Klubnik from Clemson and a couple of guys that were also supposed to come out this year. But it's a bad class, but it's really deep with guys that will be on rosters in 5 years.
And then in seven, they'll be assistant coaches.
Bingo.
And nine, they'll be offensive coordinators. Cody, it's so great to talk to you again. Thanks for giving us so much of your time. And enjoy what's ahead.
I always appreciate you guys. I'll enjoy it, and I'll hopefully be back on with you guys sometime soon. Have a good one.
Let's do it. All right. Cody Carpentier, rosterwatch.com for his rankings. Okay, we'll take a break here. The medal ceremony is happening. U.S. beats Canada on a spectacular overtime goal, 3-on-3 play by Megan Keller, number 5. This was pretty close to the amount of time you said might be the over-under in the 3-on-3 for the men before we knew there'd be 3-on-3 also for the women, right? 3 or 4 minutes?
Yeah.
In?
That's a hell of
more than three.
What a great play. It's a little going the other way, but a little Brad May on Ray Bourque in 93. Like, just jumping around, and the defender overplayed and went past, and she cut back, and the goal wasn't the same, but still, it reminded me of that a little bit, looking in a mirror, like, just opposite sides.
After all that, to neatly raise, to lift a backhand
right
from in tight.
Over the pad, under the blocker. It's a sneaky, it always looks like a bad goal, but it's a spot that if you can hit it regularly, it's almost always there. Right. Just the way goalies are trained to play, it's just not a spot that you can defend easily.
Yeah, just got to keep the blocker up here.
Right.
Listen to me telling you how goaltending works. That's probably, I've said enough. I think I've said enough.
We're all good.
We will take a break here and look for your calls after the update. Want to talk draft with us? That would be great. We're in the mood. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here at 803-0550. This is WGR and now 107.7 and 104.7 FM, WGR FM.
As a man, finding a great pair of pants feels harder than it should. Some look sharp but feel stiff. Others are comfortable but wrinkle, stain, or lose their shape by noon. And if you're working, traveling, or constantly on the move, most pants just cannot keep up. That's where Jack Archer comes in.
JackArcher.com delivers one pair of pants designed for real life. Whether it's golf with the guys or date night with someone special, these pants will keep you comfortable and looking polished wherever the day takes you.
That's right, Mark. The Jack Archer Jet Setter Tech Pant is wrinkle-free, stain-resistant, and built to hold its shape all day. With customizable fit options and multiple colors, these are the one pair of pants you'll want to wear every day.
Jack Archer, ready when you are. For a limited time, get 15% off your first order with code GETJACK at jackarcher.com. Again, that's promo code GETJACK at jackarcher.com for 15% off your first order.
You're a pro at running your life, at committing to your workout, at showing up every day. At Bombas, we're pros too. Pros at making socks. Our sport assortment has specialized socks for whatever sport you're committed to. Running, hiking, golf, Pilates, and so much more. Made with sweat-wicking yarns, blister-fighting details, and targeted arch support. Bombas Sport is pro-level socks from the pros of socks. For another pro, you. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code audio for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com and use code audio.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The dynamism level of tackle breaking between Mekhi Lemon and Casey Concepcion, I see more outside play from Concepcion, and my literal comp for Casey Concepcion was none other than Stephon Diggs. It's a guy that fits that mold, and that tree of comps for me is the Zay Flowers, Stephon Diggs, and Antonio Brown. That's kind of that tree where it's a guy that's thought of as a slot, but has the new age alpha, is what I call it. Whether it's the Malik Nabers, the Jamar Chase, the Antonio Browns, the Stephon Diggs, that whole realm of these new age guys. And that's a lot of what Concepcion brings to the table and why I've vaulted him ahead.
That's Cody Carpentier on with Schoep and Bulldog yesterday on wide receiver. Casey Concepcion, who's one of the guys we'll be talking a lot about and have talked a lot about this spring. He was really good. You want to check that out? Find it on demand, WGR550.com. And the Odyssey app. Good morning. It's Jeremy and Joe here on a warmer Friday that's also really rainy. Let's get that snow melted. Get some sun on the grass. Get rid of the mud. Let's get the summer. It's February. You just need to go somewhere warm, right? To go somewhere warm for a week. Never. Everybody needs that at least once. Carl Jones now on the Wester Hotline from Channel 4 WIVB. Carl, have you gotten away? Have you gotten anywhere warm in the last couple months?
Unfortunately, I haven't, but I am going to Vietnam in like a month. So I'm
really
gonna save my money up. Yeah, I'm gonna be out there for like 2 weeks. So I'm gonna get enough warm weather and that trip over to that part of the world.
Is that a trip? Is that like what kind of trip is that?
My fiance is from there, so we're going back.
Okay.
See her good people and see that part of the world. So I'm excited.
Awesome. That's awesome. Next month, you're going?
Yeah. So everything's running into each other. It'll be right before the draft.
How long a flight is that?
It's so long that I don't want to know. Like, I just told them I'm going to show up to the airport and just hopefully wake up in Vietnam.
All right, cool. Well, that'll be fun. Carl on the Wester Hotline at Jones11 underscore on Twitter if you want to follow him there. A lot of good stuff on the Bills, of course, and all things football. Are you following the Olympics a lot? Like, how much are you into the Winter Olympics?
It's funny because I'm a Summer Olympics guy through and through. Love track and field. Did it as a kid. Obviously love hoops. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really like the Winter Olympics until I moved here, and then I saw the enthusiasm from everybody. So, yeah, I'm tapped into the hockey. I don't know what I'm looking at with Luge, but I'm watching it. the sport that's similar to it where they're face forced, I'm watching that too. I don't know what's going on, but I like it.
Yeah, that's the one sport that we've talked about that, like, that's the one I wouldn't want to try. Like, just too fast, feels like I'd fall off, dangerous, right? Whereas, like, you know, skiing, I'll ski once in a while. So... yeah, there's a lot of sports that I feel like a lot of people haven't tried before, though, or had never even heard of until the week got rolling. So anyways.
I'm just confused because I don't know how you find out you're good at luge. Like, how do you accidentally stumble into that?
Right. How do you practice it, and how do you – right. The timing of it, like, how often do you not crash into walls, I guess? But anyways. Carl on the Wester Hotline. So, Carl, we spent a lot of time today on – the veterans of the offseason. We'll get to the draft. We still have about 2 months, and I do want to get to that a little bit with you. But in terms of, like, big ideas, if they were to make – the Bills were to make a splash move, there are tons of guys that you could look at, whether that's in the trade market. We've Max Crosby rumors all over the place. Free agency, you could look at Trey Hendrickson, or on offense with, like, Alec Pierce or Mike Evans. Do you have one big idea that you like more than others, whether that's in the trade market or free agency?
I am a big fan of trading some capital to go get a relatively youngish receiver, you know, whether that is the Brian Thomas Juniors of the world, the two guys that are in the AFC East, Waddle or Garrett Wilson. The Marvin Harrison one is intriguing to me. I'm an Ohio State guy, so I should be biased on Marv, but over the last 2 years, I think I'm soured on him a little bit. But I think that I will be in favor in that. And listen, this is the show to talk about wide receivers. You guys know the benefits of getting a chief receiver and how it helps out with the salary cap and the long-term ramifications of that. It's just the one thing with free agency, if you don't take the trade route, you're overpaying. And usually, like, my adage is, like, good players don't get the free agency, especially good wide receivers. Like, I would still be shocked if Alec Pierce hits the open market. I still think the Colts are going to figure that out. And whether that's Michael Pittman hitting the market, that's a different discussion. Mm-hmm. But even if he does, a caliber player at that age of Alec Pierce rarely hits the market. So if he does, he's going to get a price tag that I'm sure a lot of Bills fans are going to be like, well, we like him, but not at that number.
Right. What do you think has gone wrong for Harrison Jr. in Arizona? Because he was it's tough to live up to it, right? Like, he had – oh, this guy's a surefire Hall of Famer before he had played a snap in the league. And his dad, I think, you know, helped that along because of his reputation. He's not been terrible, but kind of like Brian Thomas Jr., I think, in Jacksonville, like – people were just expecting a little bit more in year two, and it didn't happen. So, I don't know. When you watch him, what do you think the problem has really been?
When I watched him at Ohio State, he was refined for his size, and he had good ball skills, and he played strong for his for the competition that he faced. But now that he's in the NFL, I don't know if he has a calling card or anything that he can hang his hat on when things get tough. Like, for example, the guy who got drafted right behind him in Malik Nabers. Malik Nabers has like 10 rockets up his behind. Like, that's how fast he plays. He's super explosive. Is Marv a guy who's going to be this technician on the outside? He hasn't shown that. He doesn't have great play strength, which I think kind of hurts for someone his size. Like, you see someone who's 6'3", 200-plus, you're like, oh, wow, he's some strong receiver on the outside, and that's not really his game. So I'm not out on Marv, but I think the generational billing that I'm so excited about, I think, hasn't come to fruition for that reason.
Yeah. What about on defense? What if there is a splash move there? Hendrickson in free agency, Crosby at edge rusher. Are any of those ideas to you good ideas for the Bills, or would you rather see them address that for cheap in the draft at some point?
Once again, I think you're just going to have to, especially in the case of Crosby, because I think there's going to be people for his services. Despite the injuries over the last 2 years, you're going to have to give up a one and probably like four, if I had to guess. I know the Raiders said, like, hey, we want what Micah Parsons got. Relax. You're not getting that. He's been hurt the last 2 years, and he's just not Micah Parsons, like, quite frankly. So If the Bills were comfortable giving up that and fitting that salary cap under their books, I would be for it. I do see some guys, like, probably a tier or two below them that I like, whether that's a Boye Mafe, whether that's a Dafe Owe. And once again, 26-year-old edge rushers that hit the market. Remember how we all felt about Milton Williams last year? We were like, whoa, how in the world did he get $100 million?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to see some sticker prices for those two guys where it's like, you know what? We wanted to improve off the edge. I don't know if it was at that price. So if you're the Bills, I think you're going to have to pick whether it's edge or wide receiver and have a big ticket idea, whether it's via trade or free agency. And then the other one, you're going to have to use your scouting department is going to have to find some guys who outperform their contract at a bargain. Because at the end of the day, it is really hard to build your team through free agency, as you guys know.
No,
you're going to have to find some value, whether that is at edge or wide receiver.
Definitely. It is a place, though, where once in a while you can get that one star-level player that they did with Vaughn, right? But that's 4 years ago now, and they haven't really done that. They've done the middle-tier free agency since then. And that's where, like, I do like the Hendrickson idea because – I do think he's that caliber of player, and the good news about him versus, like, if you have to trade for Crosby is I can have Hendrickson and also whoever my first-round pick is, where, I don't know, like, the Crosby idea to me is I'm paying him a ton of money. That's probably most of what I'm going to use that for in the offseason, and I'm also probably not spending my first-round pick. So, like, to me, there's a big difference between Hendrickson and Crosby just because of that.
I agree. And the thing that with Hendrickson, because he's a bit older, he's not going to command a longer deal. Like, he's probably going to get a 3-year deal, and it's probably going to really and truly be a 2-year deal with the fake money on the third year. So I think Hendrickson would be much better in terms of your cap sheet. And then Crosby, I know his play deteriorated a little bit last year, but that was a putrid Raiders team, and you guys know how that works when it's December 15th, and I have no help on my D-line, and I'm getting triple-teamed every play.
Carl Jones with us on the Wester Hotline from Channel 4 here in Buffalo. In the secondary, quickly before we get to some draft stuff, there have been some ideas floated out there, like Buda Baker is a name that some talk about. I don't know if he'll actually even be a real idea for anyone. There are reports that the Dolphins will try to move Minkah Fitzpatrick. And we had this with Waddle a little bit, like, would they even do business with you? I don't know how you feel about him, but I feel like I've been seeing for about a year now that he's not the same level of player that he was in his prime. Maybe that changed a little bit last year. So for him, same thing. Like, would you also consider him to be one of these guys that's going to be expensive both for trade and contract, or is he more of a buy low because he's not the same player?
I would buy low because he's in the last year of his deal. So, like, what does that trade even look like? Like, are you getting a fifth for him? Like, you're not going to command anything serious with Minkah Fitzpatrick, I believe, at 29 or 30 entering the last year of his deal. And I like Minkah. I think that he's a player that if you use him in one role, he's still a really good player. Down there in Miami, he put a little bit more of the nickel spot. So if that's their idea for a nickel, have Cole Bishop be more of the safety, and then you guys go get a deep field guy, I think that works. But I'm not breaking the bank for Minkah. I believe that you spent a high premium asset on Cole Bishop. You, like we talked about earlier, I think that other safety spot, that's the position where you can try to find some good value. Whether that is a Brian Cook from the Chiefs, if you get him like on a 2-year 10, whether that is, I'm trying to think of some other guys who are hitting the market. I think Buda Baker's is far too expensive. I don't, for how much I love my DBs, putting a lot of assets into safeties is just not something that I think is good team building.
Do you, I think you maybe said it a little bit in there. Do you have something in mind that you think is the right type of safety that would pair with Cole Bishop?
I would love to see Cole Bishop closer to the line of scrimmage. And don't get it twisted. I think he is going to be a star. I truly do. But I think he's really good around the line of scrimmage, and I think he's just good down the field. So if you can get you a safety who is has an archetype of really good ball skills, he can play the deep post, he's comfortable in space, he can tackle in space, that's the type of player I think will be really good next to a Cole Bishop if you want him to shine. Because if you're Jim Leonard and you come into this defense and you're working around so much, you want to revolve your defense around a player or two. And I think down there in over there in Denver, whether it was Vance Joseph's call, whether it was Jim Leonard's call, Pat Surtain was the reason how they did everything. Listen, Pat Surtain is going to go here, and we're going to dictate it because of him. Cole Bishop, in my opinion, is the type of player where we can put him at nickel in certain game plans, put him in the box in certain game plans. So if you have a safety that can help him accentuate those traits, it will go a long way to help out the whole team.
That on the defense and how it's kind of schemed, you make an interesting point about corner there, because that style of defense, I know it's not exactly the same, but Jim Leonard talked about Rex and his defenses a little bit as well, and Rex had Revis, right? Like, he had a guy that he could just leave out there and trust fully against anybody, and the Broncos had that in Surtain. How do you think the Bills will act that way with Christian Benford, or do you think it'll be a little bit different in terms of how much they trust him versus how much these similar defenses have put, you know, like elite corners kind of on their own?
Listen, I think Christian Benford's a ball player, like top 10 corner in the world. That good brother is not Patrick Tan or Darrell Revis. So I hope that Jim Leonard doesn't have the idea that he can play 10 on 10 like he had at Hall, like Rex had with Darrell Revis. I mean, Patrick Tan was Defensive Player of the Year. Like, this is a he's on a Hall of Fame trajectory type of thing. Now, can there be certain game plans and packages where we say, hey, let's play 10 on 10 and just let CB take away their wide receiver one? Sure. But I think if – let's just play the math here. Let's just say in Denver they let Pat Surtain travel on 50% of the snaps. CB, 30%. You know, like, we'll give you the opportunity to do it in certain down and distances. But Pat Surtain is a bad boy. Like, I mean, he's one of the top 15 best players on planet Earth.
Right. How do you feel on the overall about how the defense shifts? Like, from the McDermott style that I think sounds a lot different from what they're going to be incorporating now. Like, are you a fan of the type of defense that Leonard employs and that we'll probably see the Bills use very similarly to what Denver did?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds good on paper. It sounds good now. A lot more attacking, a lot more variety up front. So it's going to be, like Jim Leonard said, put more pressure on the quarterback pre and post snap, which I think is important. But like I tell everyone, man, like, everyone's scheme looks good until the players get out there, you know, and Sean McDermott's scheme isn't all that different than, let's just say, what they got going on down there in Houston. Houston just has two horses off the edge and an all-pro cornerback to make it look excellent. So I don't think that what Jim Leonard is doing is something revolutionary, but I do think it's fresh, it's unique, and if he can get the right body types in here and the right players, I think you can really shine with it. Because, I mean, that was ultimately the issue in Buffalo over the past X amount of years in the postseason. I don't think the schematics were wrong. They just didn't have the horses to run the style that they wanted to. So, I mean, listen, Denver's defense has been great. They also have Nick Benito, Zach Allen, John Franklin Myers, Jonathan Cooper, and Pastor Tan. So I love it on paper. Let's just see what body types they bring in here to make it work.
Right. John Franklin Myers, by the way, someone that maybe the Bills will look to in free agency. Yeah, that is – the whole offseason is going to be this. I talked about this with Tim Graham the other day. Like, the whole offseason is going to be figuring out, all right, what was Sean McDermott's fault that they're trying to improve off of? And one thing that I feel like I'm starting to hear is at edge rusher specifically, why they have not had that star is because they've – purposely gone for a certain type of edge rusher that fit better with the way McDermott wanted to play defense. And you often were getting these bigger, stiffer, your Rousseaus, your Epinesas that are going to be good at setting the edge and be responsible in their rush lanes versus quicker speed rushers. And I don't know, now it's sounding like, well, now we're going to do that. We couldn't with McDermott, and now we can because we have this new style of defense, which I guess I like the sound of on paper, but it also kind of sounds like you're making excuses for why you haven't had great pass rushers.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with getting, like, a bunch of pocket crushers. We just saw the Seattle Seahawks win a Super Bowl like that. Like,
right.
They don't have any demons off the edge. They just have a bunch of defensive linemen who are just putting their paws in your face and saying, I'm going to get this quarterback by any means. I just think they didn't find the higher-end pocket crushers, so then it looks worse in the postseason. Like, some example of guys who play like that. Joey Bosa in his prime, he was those guys who, he wasn't dipping and running, he was just putting his paws in your chest and pushing you backwards. Hey, Jaren Verse is of that ilk. You just saw DeMarcus Lawrence on the Seattle Seahawks play in that manner. I don't think there was anything inherently wrong with how Groot or how Joey Bosa or how AJ Epinesa plays. They just didn't find the higher-end players of that archetype, so it looks worse. It's no different than if you find a bunch of speed guys off the edge, but they suck in the run. Like, it's kind of, we all want the high-end archetype of what we want to get, what we are desiring. You just got to make sure that you get that, because we, once again, the Broncos, they went with the smaller guys. Last year, they got ran all over in the postseason because of that. They fixed it this year by getting Dre Greenlaw, Telehon Hufanga up the middle. So you just got to make sure that if you choose one archetype, you better get the A-plus version of it, or you better help out in other areas.
Carl Jones with us on the Western Hotline. On the draft, quickly, Carl, is there any ideas or players that you're falling for a little bit with still a ways to go?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, team wide receiver, that's not really a surprise. I mean, yep. Watched the Buckeyes my whole life, so I'll obviously tune in as Carnell Tate. Probably going to go a little too high. I will say this. I'm going to make this abundantly clear. I don't think this is the year to, like, fantasize about, like, trading up into the top 10. I think that was appropriate for the Roma Dunze year, the neighbor's year. I don't think none of these receivers are worth giving up a future one for. I just don't think that's the case. For one, I don't think it's appropriate to trade up a one for anyone that's not a quarterback, or you better be Julio Jones. But, I mean, listen, if one of these guys is still there at 18 or 19, yeah, let's make that happen. Whether that is Mekhi Lemon, a Carnell Tate, I really like Jordan Fice in it, but I'm not a doctor. Who knows what his hamstrings look like. And then I did hear before I got on, KC Concepcion. I love the way he plays with his pacing. So I haven't dove all the way in yet, but those top four guys have definitely got my attention.
All right, Carl Jones on the Western Hotline. Always good stuff. At Jones11 underscore if you want to follow him on Twitter. Thanks, Carl. We'll talk soon.
Have a good one.
Carl Jones on the Western Hotline. The Bills and the rest of the league get started with free agency in a couple of weeks. And we are 2 months and 3 days, I believe, from the first round of the NFL draft, where the Bills are slated to pick 26th. We're watching this ski jumping. One thing that I do think is fun about the Olympics is if you're watching us on YouTube, you see our facial reactions as we're watching things. Like yesterday, I had Chopin Bulldog on for a moment on YouTube, and one of the goals I think happened, or maybe a play happened while, and like you saw it, like they didn't reference it because they were talking to a guest. And you might have just seen me do that when we're talking to Carl. I don't even remember. Carl was talking about Marvin Harrison Jr., I think. And one of the, what would we call them?
They're not
ski jumpers, though, because ski jumpers are ski jumpers.
Ski, they're the ones that are doing acrobatics.
There you go, aerialists. I like that. Your
nice.
Aerialists. One of your aerialists went up, did his 12 flips, and then landed so hard on his back and on the back of his head.
Yes.
That I like made a, like, oh, what just happened? He got up.
He went down the rest of the hill.
I don't know how.
Wow.
He got up.
Wow.
Because
I would not have gotten up.
It was one of those, like you see this in football a lot. It was one of those, his back hit the ground and then his head whipped and like the whiplash.
It was Tua. Right.
Hit the back. It was a Tua hit.
Or the thing that Dahlin avoided in the Sweden game.
Except he was coming from 50 feet in the air.
Right. Going like 45 miles an hour.
He made it down.
That.
They had a camera on him afterwards, and he didn't look shaken.
That is psychotic.
No.
What do they have in those helmets?
Man.
Man. I'll miss the Olympics. Although, I say that, and it will be immediately replaced with Sabres playoff race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sabres playoff race. Let's go.
I'm so ready to get back in on that. Like, yep. I've been itching to watch. Like, it's just going to be so much fun.
I'm not going to lie, and maybe this is just, you know, 14 years have ingrained this in me. I am nervous about the three games out of the break.
Yeah.
Because they are all on the road, and two of the three are on the Florida trip, which they historically have not done well in. And I don't know what Florida's going to look like. They got to play Florida and beat them on the Monday before the season paused, but they didn't have a lot of their guys.
Right.
They didn't have Marchand. They didn't have who on the blue line? Kulikov's not the name you want for this.
Who was it? Wasn't Forsling was in. It was somebody else. But I know. Yeah,
one of their important defensemen. Depleted. Why can't I remember?
Mikula
didn't play.
And they were not at full strength.
Right.
And so, you know, you feel good about getting them, but
what are they now?
They're going to come back. Like, it's going to be tough.
And they got tough games. Like, if you consider that Florida game a tough game, they have two games with Tampa.
Yeah.
Pretty close together out of this break.
They got Vegas. First home game.
Yeah.
Jersey in there somewhere.
I would say they actually play Vegas twice in a couple of weeks.
Right.
A lot of the other games look okay, but it's just those couple of tough games. There's a Pittsburgh game in here, which we'll see if Crosby plays. The report on Crosby today is that he wants to play against Finland.
Right.
But he doesn't know if he'll be able to. Yeah. My guess is he will not play.
I would think that he doesn't play.
Maybe he plays in the gold medal game, though. I think, though, even if you're a Penguins fan and you are, like, hanging on, you know, you're hanging out on the ledge, like, is Crosby going to play the rest of the season? Because it looked like his knee buckled.
Yeah.
When he got hit by Gudas.
Yeah, did not look good.
You're thinking about him coming back at all. And right. I think him saying he wants to play today would
give you a sign
that it's not like a season-ending
injury. Yeah, it's probably a mild strain or sprain, and he'll maybe take a week off when he gets back and hope that Pittsburgh can stay afloat and then come back for the final push. That'd be my expectation.
Pittsburgh's in the second spot in the Metro. They are tied in points with the Sabres.
Mm-hmm.
So, it would be good if they fell back, but we'll see. All right, my brother Lou DiBiase is going to join us coming up next. Locked On Eagles. We talked a lot about A.J. Brown today, and a lot of different opinions one way or the other on how good an idea that is for the Bills. Because it does sound like he wants New England, and New England probably wants him. You want to get in the way of that? 803-0550 is the phone number. Jeremy and Joe on WGR. Now on 104.7 and 107.7 WGR-FM.
Buying pants shouldn't take this much effort. Too many options, inconsistent sizing, and styles that don't work across your day. You want something comfortable, sharp, and reliable without guessing, returning, or buying five different pairs. That's why there's Jack Archer.
Yes, jackarcher.com simplifies everything with the Jet Setter Tech Pant. One versatile pair designed to take you from work to weekend without missing a beat. Easy to wear, easy to style, and easy to shop for. The Jet Setter Tech Pant is wrinkle-free, stain-resistant, and built for all-day comfort. They stretch, breathe, and hold their shape, giving you a consistent fit and polished look every time. Backed by thousands of five-star reviews, they're the dependable pants you'll reach for daily.
Jack Archer, ready when you are. For a limited time, get 15% off your first order with code GETJACK at jackarcher.com. Again, that's promo code GETJACK at jackarcher.com for 15% off your first order.
Studies show that 100% of everybody in the world wants to curl up indoors and do nothing because it's so darn cold out there. That's why many people are turning to Bombas, whose pillowy plush slippers and warm merino wool socks have been said to be the most comfortable in the history of feet. Bombas products have been found to boost coziness by up to 1,000,000%. Okay, enough fake statistics, but could Bombas socks and slippers really be the cure? Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. With the new year upon us, there's no better time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and, I hope, entertaining insights on your money and, more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.
You never get ahead of yourself. As Hurts going down the field, can they do it again? Yes, they can! A.J. Brown, incredible! Touchdown number three. You know, if you get three
touchdowns... Thank you for fading out Tony Romo there. I don't need to hear from Tony Romo until September.
Couldn't let it happen. Is he going to be on the number one crew next year?
He...
Like, come on.
That's a good question. We're 2 years removed from when CBS like went to his house to have like an intervention about him not doing the work, and he's still there, so maybe they've resolved that. I don't know. I'm ready for it, though. I'm ready for Romo to get kicked down to the second string or third string. Actually, you know what? You know why that is going to happen? And actually, it's perfect time to bring on my brother, Lou DiBiase. We're going to talk some A.J. Brown, because the guy that I think is going to get kicked up to number one in that booth, Lou has never been a big fan of. Lou, do you know who I'm about to say?
No, I don't.
J.J. Watt.
Ah, yeah. Okay, great. Awesome.
Never. Lou always believed
how hard he's working out, lifting right. his tires at 2 a.m., hoping the cameras aren't around.
Yeah, right. Your claim was he always knew where the camera was.
Always knew where the camera was.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think he's going to be...
That'll be fitting for the booth, then.
I think he's better than Romo, though.
I mean, yeah, but I think that's a pretty low bar at this point.
Yeah, so we'll see. All right, I got you on. We're talking A.J. Brown. We were talking dream ideas for the Bills. They'll probably have room for, like, one big move this offseason. Probably not two. Hendrickson, Max Crosby, and A.J. Brown came up. I don't think the Bills would do that. I don't think the Eagles will do that. And he, of course, did the thing yesterday where he answered podcast questions about Mike Vrabel. So now everyone's talking about it today. Let's start there. What are the odds you actually think he gets traded?
It's 50-50 at this point. I don't think the Eagles want to get rid of A.J. Brown. I think it's up to A.J. If he is going to come back and be the distraction that he was in 2025, anytime there is inconsistencies in the passing game, which with a new scheme, they're I got news for you. There probably will be. There's going to be times they run the football more than pass. There's going to be times that Devontae Smith is more involved than A.J. Brown. He can't do what he did last year every time that happens. So I think the Eagles are probably going to have to sit down with him and say, like, are you all in or are you all out? I don't think they can have that kind of wishy-washy, you know, diva mentality from last year. But in a vacuum, no, the Eagles don't want to get rid of A.J. Brown. Everything they've done this offseason is about evolving the passing game. That's been the name of the game with all of their coaching changes. So to get rid of your elite wide receiver one and eat over $40 million in dead cap feels kind of counterproductive to that goal.
That's another part of it, right, is that it's easy from our perspective to look at and say, like, A.J. Brown trade's a great idea because the team acquiring him is only on the hook for $7 million, but
yeah.
You've got to convince the Eagles, and this is where I think it would be expensive in what you're giving them, you've got to make it worth their while to eat $40 million,
yeah.
Which means to me you're paying a crazy price.
Well, it's not that it's completely off the table, though, because the Eagles could designate it as a post-June 1st trade, which would make it a little right. easier to stomach. You know, the Eagles also in the past have been pretty okay with eating big dead cap hits because it does free up cash savings, though, and they use a lot of that cash to, when they use contract extensions, they spend a lot of upfront guaranteed money and they backload salary cap hits. So freeing up the actual cash will help. So I don't think it's completely out of the realm of possibilities. There's ways to go around it if a team were to offer them, like, a first-round pick or, let's say, a day-two pick and a caliber player like a Brian Thomas Jr. Not that Jacksonville would be interested, but let's just say you could get somebody like that caliber in return. I don't think it's completely off the table. I do think, though, again, the Eagles want to find a way to make this work, but I think the ball's in A.J.'s court, and right now I have no idea if he wants to stay or not, because on the Michael Parsons podcast, it sounded like he was on board with the changes with the coaching staff and kept kind of talking about the Eagles in a we perspective. But then he goes on the podcast the other day with Edelman and Gronk, and he's winking about becoming a Patriot. And he's very wishy-washy, but that's kind of been A.J. Brown his entire career.
Lou DiBiase, Locked On Eagles on the Wester Hotline. Is there any concern about age with him and the style of player he is. Like if
yeah.
if we were figuring out like, okay, you want a number one receiver for the long haul, he'll be 29 going into this season. Is his style going to age well?
So that's interesting. I actually was looking at that during the season when AJ wasn't being that productive the first half of the year, and that was more a product of the awful play calling. Jalen Hurts' inconsistencies. Devontae Smith was breaking out. But I was starting to wonder to myself, like, is he slowing down? I started looking at, like, other receivers of his caliber, of his style in NFL history, and, like, when they started slowing down. And AJ's hero is Julio Jones, and it's a similar style of star receiver. So I went back and looked at Julio's stats. A.J. Brown is heading into year 8. When Julio Jones was in year 8, he still had two more seasons where he had over 1,300 yards. Actually, the following season, in year 8, he had almost 1,700 yards. So A.J., I still think, looking at that kind of trajectory, can be a star for a couple more years. But then Julio, in year 9, 10, 11, really dropped off. I'm not saying A.J. Brown will suffer the same kind of fate because he hasn't had the injuries that Julio Jones did at the time. But I still think like you can guarantee he's a top 5, top 10 receiver for two more years, maybe 3 to 4. But I still think it would definitely be worth trading for him if you're a team like the Bills or, you know, New England, Baltimore that wants this kind of player. Because I still think for a couple more years, he'll be a top 5, top 10 guy.
Is the problems he had with the offense the whole results of the offense, or is it strictly how often they run the ball? Because that's thing is that the Bills are not that different than the Eagles. Like you look at all the charts and like how often teams run the ball in neutral situations, and like the Bills are right down there with the Eagles.
Yeah, I tend to roll my eyes when people are like, oh, A.J. Brown just wants the offense to be productive like we all do. It's like, no, he wants the football because every year there's been instances where he's frustrated. He was mad in a blowout playoff win in 2022 against the Giants in the divisional round that he wasn't getting the football. In 2023, week 2 against Minnesota, Devontae Smith is cooking the Vikings, and A.J. Brown's mad in the second half. There was a sidelines dispute with him and Jalen Hurts. 2024, they're on a 10-game win streak, and he's mad about the passing game. So I think sometimes people give him too much credit for just wanting what's best for the offense. He just wants production. But no, like I think he was frustrated last year with how conservative they were, with how inconsistent the entire unit was as a whole. But he was more mad that he was kind of being used as a decoy the first half of the year, that they didn't know how to get him the football. And I think he's always preferred to probably not be in a run-first attack, which he's been in his entire career. Remember, with Tennessee, he was playing with Derrick Henry. Now in Philadelphia, he's with Jalen Hurts and Saquon Barkley. So I think he wants his numbers, and I think it's understandable. Most receivers do, but yeah, I don't think it was in the name of just like the team production overall. I think he doesn't like being in the style of offense that Philadelphia currently runs.
My guess is that if in the last 5 minutes, a lot of the fans that maybe were on the fence about wanting him in Buffalo are now turned off to the idea.
But I will say,
it's the Diggs experience,
though,
too.
Yeah, but he's still worth it to me because no teammates have ever talked bad about A.J. Brown. Like, yeah, it's a nuisance, and I think it can be frustrating that he shouldn't be this mad. I totally understand why there are some frustrations with A.J. Like, Jalen Hurts has been a very inconsistent passing quarterback over the years. They always have different play callers, and they do run more than pass, and they've been conservative when they don't need to be. Like, they're the highest payroll offense in football. But for him to be as mad as he was when he's had, like, two 1,400-yard seasons with Philly, 1,000 yards at least in 4 straight seasons, you know, he shouldn't be that mad, but no teammates have ever, like, talked bad about him. He's not doing sit-ups in the driveway like Terrell Owens, and I don't know, like, a player of that caliber I still think is worth it. I think the Bills, looking back now, or at least fans would probably say, we'll deal with that to bring back that caliber of receiver. So that's why the Eagles, I think they agree with a lot of AJ's frustrations, and that's why they still want to make it work, even if he can be annoying at times.
Yeah, I'm in that boat. I don't know how many fans typically are. Like, it's split. Like, it's why he's a little bit of a bit of a polarizing idea. So I'm with you, though. Like, you sound like if I'm the Eagles, I'll put up with it because he's worth it.
Yeah, I mean, I watched what happened with the Bills over the past couple of years. I've seen, and it's not that, you know, history does say if you lose this kind of player, you can still compete for a championship. I mean, the Bills have the Chiefs won 2 more Super Bowls after they traded away Tyreek Hill. They do still have Devontae Smith, and I think he's a top 10 receiver in the league if he was featured the way AJ has been in this offense. So it's not like the end of the world if he's gone, but do I want to get rid of that kind of player when your passing game is already pretty inconsistent? No, I don't. I still think he can have 2 to 3 more elite seasons. So I would try to make it work. But right now, like, it's gun to my head, if I had to predict if he's in Philly or not, it's like 50-50, maybe 51-49 that he stays, but I'm really on the fence with it.
Lou DiBiase, who's going to the Combine next week.
That's right.
Love that. You've not been to the Combine. You've usually done Senior Bowl, right?
Yeah, Senior Bowl, Super Bowl. This will be the first Combine, so who knows? I might have to start watching some receivers at this point.
The Combine. Feels like everybody's at the Combine. I'll have Sal text you. There's like restaurants that you're like everyone's got
to
hit up.
I've never been to Indianapolis. No idea how to approach it, but it'll be fun.
There's a steakhouse there that I think everybody.
Yeah. I heard something about a shrimp cocktail appetizer.
That's at this place, I think. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I've been told about that in some deli by Lucas Oil Stadium. So we'll check it out.
I don't know about a deli. Lou is a any food for breakfast kind of guy.
Correct, yeah.
He doesn't believe in breakfast as a concept. He thinks you should be able... Lou sent me a picture at 8 o'clock in the morning a week ago of him eating crab salad.
I'll eat a chicken Caesar wrap at 7 a.m.,
yeah.
Stuff shells at 9 o'clock. Doesn't matter to me. I'm hungry, I eat what I want to eat.
You're getting looks around the room here.
Yeah, I don't
know. Only non-breakfast item I'd go for breakfast is pizza.
A pepperoni pizza?
Sure, if it's cold, that's breakfast.
Yeah. I blame the overnight radio shifts back in the day. That used to make me eat whatever was available. So now I don't like
clocks,
breakfast food.
Clocks don't exist to you.
Nope, that's correct.
All right.
That's fair.
All right. Thanks, Lou.
Thanks.
Lou DiBiase, Locked On Eagles. You want to check him out there? Does that insult you? The idea of eating crab salad at 9 o'clock in the morning?
Crab salad's a choice.
If you're going to go all in on...
I'll
eat anything at any time of the day, then that means anything at any time of the day.
I respect it.
You respect crab salad at 9 o'clock in the morning?
I respect going that distance, yes.
I have time for the commitment to the bit, but I can't imagine my stomach handling crab salad at... 5 a.m.
When we roll in here, we're all eating crab salad.
That's a problem.
Is that why breakfast food is different than the rest of the day food? Because
easier to digest.
Because there's nothing in your stomach.
Yeah, I think like eggs are really easy. Toast is super easy.
Right.
Cereals like just toast with milk. Basically.
And even like the sausage and bacon. That cereal
Is cereal just toast with milk?
Well, it's not.
Put a poll up. I want to hear what the people have to say about that. I think I like that.
It's bread. It's some sort of form of bread. That's
what about grain?
Baked and
grain is bread.
So you've done the pizza.
Correct.
Yes.
You've done the pizza for breakfast thing, because to me, like, that fits under the qualification of easy to it's bread based, right?
It's bread, tomato.
But that's the
cheese.
Thing. Tomato sauce before 11 o'clock in the morning is not something most people would go for.
What are British beans in? Tomato sauce.
I don't know what that
they're
is.
Not barbe- they're not barbecue. They're not barbecue. You know how they eat toast and beans?
Stop
beans and toast?
Conversation now with going to British beans.
Did you live in like Manchester for a summer? Like,
no.
What are you talking about? You've never seen that? I don't know what you're talking about.
They're not baked beans like our barbecue baked beans, but they're like beans in a tomato sauce they put on toast.
That's their
breakfast.
They also eat like congealed blood with breakfast. Like, hey. I don't need...
Black pudding isn't as vile as anyone thinks, okay?
Yeah, the British are not known for their culinary arts.
We don't need to be bringing Britain into this conversation eating.
I've looked up a picture of British baked beans, and I can tell you I would never touch it in my life.
I wouldn't touch it, but it's tomato-based. So I guess that's the alignment. And then cheese you put on whatever for breakfast.
Sure.
It's got to be a certain type of pizza, though.
But you're not, he said chicken Caesar wrap at 7 o'clock in the morning. That's out?
That I can see because it's lettuce. Like, it's mostly lettuce.
And a salad? If you get like turkey or chicken sausage for like breakfast, it's aligned with that, right?
Fine. It's really dependent on, I think, the food.
Yeah.
Is really the indicator there.
803-0550 is the phone number. If you want on this, that's fine. Would you eat the anything for breakfast mentality? Is it offensive? We got Patrick Bacon coming up at 9 o'clock, no pun intended. He is coming up from hockeystats.com on the Olympics and the Sabres' chances to make the playoffs, which his site has pretty darn high. That's coming up at 9 here on WGR, now on 107.7 and 104.7 WGR FM.
As far as I'm concerned, he should be targeting going back to Kansas City. But if there is a way for him to get back to playing with a quarterback the likes of Patrick Mahomes, he should do it. It should be one of three. It should be Kansas City, Buffalo, or Baltimore.
Stephen A. Smith from earlier this week giving his thoughts on where Tyreek Hill should be playing next, as Hill was a part of a little bit of a mass exodus out of Miami. Four players ultimately released by the Dolphins, including Bradley Chubb being the other big name there. I think the name that many Bills fans will be paying attention to. And yeah, it looks like the Dolphins are going to be hitting a hard reset button with two new chief guys coming in from Green Bay, Jeff Hafley as head coach, and then John Eric Sullivan coming in as general manager. And for more on the Miami Dolphins, let's go to the Western Hotline as ESPN reporter for the Dolphins, Marcel Louis-Jacques, joins the show. Marcel, thanks for jumping on with us, man. How you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Actually, this is a good distraction there because I guess the city hit like a water line just outside my neighborhood right now, so the whole thing is flooded.
Oh, no.
And whole thing's flooded, like helicopters are flying above. So if it's loud here, I apologize. But yeah, man, it's apocalyptic here, and I guess in Miami Gardens too, huh?
Oh my goodness,
Marcel, we might need a little play, but like, give us the tea.
And here I was talking before, I'm like, oh, it's raining, you know?
Oh yeah,
it's shame raining. For us.
Yeah, I was on the phone, and my front door I have a glass front door, I can see clearly out of it, and down the street, like down in the neighborhood, I see this just wall of gray, right? And usually there's houses, there's trees, there's color where there's now gray. I was like, what the heck is going on? What is this? So I step outside and I see water shooting in the air like a volcano, man, like 30 feet in the air. I'm not even exaggerating. No. I'm on the second floor of my house and I'm looking at the water still shoot above my head. Like it's, whole neighborhood is flooded. I got friends down the street that are like, dude, I can't even get in my house right now. This is insane, man.
Dude, this is maybe the character flaw from me, but I would see what you saw, Marcel, where it's just a volcano of water, and I would just turn around and walk in the door. I'd walk in the house like my day's done. I'm not doing. That's the sign.
This is out of my control, huh?
Right. This is out of my control. I got to catch up on some TV shows. I got a book to read, so I'm done.
We're packing it.
I'm done for the day. Marcel, though,
so bad. My wife went to work, and I was telling her while she was getting ready, I was like, "Babe, you might not have to do that,
right? You can stay home. It's okay.
You might be okay. I don't know what the other side. Like, we have two gates in the neighborhood, and the main line is burst in front of one of them. So it's like, I don't know if the gates are active. I don't know what's working. Like, you might just be able to call this one. This is an act of God, or an act of Dania Beach City."
Yeah, oh, man. Well, Marcel, we brought you on to talk at the Dolphins. It's been a very busy week for you guys. The Dolphins really are the first team this offseason to get the ball rolling. They're also one of the few teams, though, that do make a change at both head coach and general manager. So how surprised really were you that the Dolphins decided to make a number of these moves?
Nah, the only one that took me by like just a little bit of surprise was Bradley Chubb, and that was maybe wishful thinking because he's just a good guy to work with, good guy in the locker room. But $31 million cap hit for 8.5 sacks and, three torn ACLs in his career. Like, if you don't have an attachment to that player, I understand saying, okay, this is from a business move. This is a no-brainer. But the Tyreek move, I think everybody was kind of bracing for this ever since that Monday night game when he dislocated his knee. You figured this was a possibility. It was a possibility based on how the season started even before the injury, when they were so bad and you're thinking, okay, there's going to be a reset button coming after the year. But it wasn't like anything that just floored you and made you sit down and take a second and be like, wow, I can't believe they really did this. You know, like it was shocking, I guess, to see all at once. But when you think about the reasons why and the fact that they just saved $23 million and are still over the salary cap, then you understand like, okay, like I get why they needed to do it.
Things had to be done. On Chubb, though, Marcel, I just kind of threw it out there because he's not a player I intimately watch or anything like that. But just off the sack numbers alone, as a Bills fan, I'm sitting here going, I'd give it a shot. I'd sign him. Maybe not to anything crazy. But it seemed like the day he's released, everyone and their mother is just like, he's a bad player. Stay as far away. You know, don't even think about it. What did you see from his time in Miami?
I have no idea what those people are talking about.
All right.
If you think this is a bad player, I don't think you know ball. And I'm willing to stand on that and take whatever heat from that. Bradley Chubb can play. Bradley Chubb's availability is his biggest enemy. Mm-hmm. You know, I missed the entire 2024 season. He, you know, he's banged up every now and then, I think in 23, even before the ACL, you know, guy that's going to pop up on the injury report fairly consistently. But, like, from a locker room perspective, this is a good leader. This is a captain. This is a good person. From a production standpoint, like, 8.5 stacks is still nothing to scoff at. Like, that's not – those aren't bad numbers, especially when you consider he's getting double-teamed on, like, a quarter, I think, of his rushes, and the Dolphins had, you know, no other pass rusher that spoke quarterback last season. He was the only threat. I don't – if you're going in there and you're expecting him to be, like, a – you know, Myles Garrett, T.J. Watt type pass rusher, Max Crosby? No. Like, no. But, like, as a high number two, yeah, dude, I think he can still play. He can still, you know, he still separates ball from man. You know, he comes through clutch in critical moments. If he's healthy, this is a good football player. Like, I think Bills fans, if you're upset at the idea of getting Bradley Chubb, just pretend that he played for – like, I don't know, man, the Colts. Like, pretend he played for
Miami.
The Jaguar. I don't care. Like, pretend he was anywhere other than Miami. And I think you can talk yourself into it. You can talk yourself into Bradley Chubb, and it'd be a lot easier than talking yourself into the player I'm guessing we're about to talk about.
Mm-hmm. A quick comment on Bradley Chubb there. That was immediately my first thing was, Marcel, it was one word, would. Like, hearing that Bradley Chubb got cut, I'm like, yeah, would.
It is funny. He got a job in 5 minutes. This was not a. I can't believe any reaction that is saying, like, he sucks. Oh, I don't want that guy. Oh, he's bad. He's like, no, dude, this is a good player. This is a good guy. Like, this is a good locker room guy. He's a vet. You know, knows how to get the job done, knows how to integrate into a locker room. So, like, yeah, I don't know. I think if you need a pass rusher, man, you can do a hell of a lot worse.
Now to wide receiver, as you mentioned, Marcel. The other big name is Tyreek Hill. I'll be honest with you. I was a little surprised he was on the Dolphins roster this year. And now with his age, the horrific injury he suffered, you mentioned that Monday Night Football, and then all of the off-the-field stuff. I mean, it's a laundry list. I don't see the fascination national people seem to have with Hill winding up on one of these big teams. I just don't see it.
Yeah, I was a little surprised that he was still on the Dolphins roster after his comments at the end of the 24 season. I'm out. I need to go somewhere where I can win. I'm too much of a competitor to not, like, all this kind of, like, vague language that suggested that he wanted out. And, like, things like that, you don't usually come back from. Pulling yourself out of a game as a captain, things like that, you really usually don't come back from. I think the team spoke for itself when he wasn't voted a captain again, you know, this season. And granted, like, speaking with Tyreek afterwards, it sounded like the entire experience was kind of humbling for him, kind of a wake-up call. But, you know, we have to see. You know, words are one thing and actions are another. So we'll have to see. But it does sound like, you know, he learned from it at the very least. And he sounded contrite when we talked to him about the incident afterward, you know, months later. But I think the issue in bringing him to Miami in the first place, obviously prolific, productive career. Nobody can argue that. Back-to-back 1,700-yard season, real threat for 2K. Like, nobody can argue that. I think the issue is Tyreek Hill is Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill is set in his ways. He is what he is. He's going to do what he does. And you know this. You know it. You know what it is when you pick it up. But for a first-time head coach who's trying to establish a culture in Miami – and they do so by adding all of these star players who are, again, not homegrown, set in their ways, you know, not guys who are going to just, like, change their entire behavior for a guy they, you know, who's never done the job before. Like, I think that's where you found some issues in Miami, and that's where it was hard for a culture to really lock in. And ironically, like, for as often as we heard them say, they're changing the culture around here. We're changing. It's accountable. It's this and that. I don't know that there ever really was a culture here. I don't know that there was a culture here because teams with a culture find a way to win tight games. Teams with a culture win on the road. Teams with a culture beat other good teams. So, like, I don't know that any actual culture or any positive one at least, really launched or really latched in Miami. And I like Mike. I have a ton of respect for Mike, and I think that he was probably done a disservice in hindsight with how the roster was constructed for him. But like, I'm not going to make excuses for him. Like, it is what it is. But yeah, it was an overall failed experiment, and it's unfortunate to say, but I defy anyone to tell me that it wasn't a failure.
Marcel Louis-Jacques of ESPN joining us here on the Western Hotline. Marcel, when it comes to staying at the position at wide receiver, I don't know if Miami is necessarily done. We heard reports about Jalen Waddle over the trade deadline this past season. Does Miami try to hold on to Waddle here for a new era going forward, or do they look at moving on from him? And then, of course, the answers to the question of what do they do about Tua Tagovailoa as well?
So let's start with Waddle. John Eric Sullivan has been pretty adamant that they want a good infrastructure in place around whoever their next quarterback is, whenever they get that quarterback in place. So like, this is a case of, we're not going for broke this season, this offseason, to make sure we get a franchise guy. That, to me, sounded like not paying $40 million or trading a second-round pick or something stupid for Mac Jones, not throwing crazy money at Malik Willis. We want to make sure the team is fixed so that when we have a rookie or, you know, any sort of franchise guy in place, there's less of a learning curve. It's hard to do that when you don't have receivers. You know what I'm saying? And Jalen Waddle, he's signed to a below-market value deal compared to what he's capable of. I think this is a guy who we have seen go for 1,000 yards without Tyreek in an offense that flatly stunk and there were no other options. Like, I think under a serious offense, I think there's a chance that, you know, he reclaims his status as a wide receiver one. That being said, it'd be kind of hard for somebody to offer a 2026 first-round pick for him and say no. Like, that, it'd be kind of hard. You know, everybody's got a plan until they're punched in the mouth. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got a plan until they are presented with an offer they can't refuse. So we'll see. You know, I'm not going to say nobody's untouchable. I think Champ Kelly had this statement, you know, when we talked to him in Madrid, and he's like, yeah, every single player had a trade value. And if it was met, they were traded. And if it wasn't, they were not traded. So Waddle has a trade value. The Dolphins have it. He's not untouchable. But, you know, it would take a lot.
Now on Tua Tagovailoa, I mean, I think he is really – it probably has been for the last few seasons the hot-button topic for Dolphins fans. Eventually, Quinn Ewers finishes out the season for the Dolphins. I'd love to hear your thoughts on him as well, as a Texas fan that has a very strong love-hate relationship with Ewers. But where do you see the Dolphins going with Tua? Do you think he's on the roster at the start next year?
I do not. I think they want to trade him. I think they are willing to pay some of his salary and maybe even sweeten the pot with the draft pick in order to facilitate such a trade. But I think Tua, again, is a reflection of a previous regime's decision-making, and they want to wipe their hands of that. It's just such a stark difference, right, from Jeff Hafley's introductory presser to Mike McDaniel's, or vice versa, where Mike, you know, it was obvious. Tua is the guy. He's on FaceTime with Tua. I'm going to coach this greatness out of you. I can't wait to work with you. Now it's, you know, we got to talk to him. You know, I just met him for the first time the other day. You know, we're gonna figure it out. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. It's so much more ambiguous that, like, or, you know, non-committal, that you can kind of – teams are usually going to tell you the truth. They're just not going to tell you the truth. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
They're gonna be honest. They're just not going to outright say it. They're going to speak in riddle. They're speaking in riddles right now. Tua is not going to be a Dolphin in 2026. I think he's ready to move on. You know, that whole being asked if you want a fresh start, and said that'd be dope. Like, he was very deliberate about that. That was the only comment he made in locker room cleanout. He deliberately wanted that message out. So I'm interested in it. This is a guy who doesn't have an agent. He fired his agent about a year ago. So I'm curious how that works out, or if he, you know, goes and rehires somebody else. If he's trying to do it himself, I don't know. But I don't expect him there. Quinn Ewers, I can't say he's going to be good. I can't say he's going to be bad. What I can say is he looks like he can play in the NFL at the very least. He looks like an NFL quarterback. Whether what level it's at, I don't know. But, like, I've seen quarterbacks not be able to run this offense. That wasn't the case with Quinn Ewers. Some rookie mistakes, some processing mistakes, but the fact that he looked real comparable to Tua in his, you know, second career action, it kind of spoke to where they are at, where their quarterback situation is at.
I kind of want to see Ewers get the full run next year. And really, I mean, morbidly, I sort of want Miami fans to, like, become what us Texas fans have been like for the last 2 years, which is tolerating Ewers for as long as they can and just watching number 16 on the sideline. Like, it'll only be worse for Dolphins fans because they might be seeing, you know, Arch, who really picked up
again. What's funny about Quinn is one of the first things I ever said to him when he got drafted was that I still haven't forgiven him for the Peach Bowl.
I'm sorry. Sorry, Marcel. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I hated him. I was in the stands for that. I yelled at him. And I owned up to it. I looked him in the eye, and I was like, dude, I still kind of hate you, but, like, I'm trying to get over it.
But respect,
I know it's awkward for him, but he laughed it off. And, like, we understand it's a joke. But, yeah, I told my wife, you know, as they lined up, I was like, you are going to see me cry today, either for good or bad. I don't know.
I'm so glad we
had the play, yeah. And I just collapsed in my seat. Like, I forgot what it was like to be, like, a real fan.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have anything left in me. I collapsed. And she's, like, rubbing by the shoulder. It's okay. There's still another overtime. I was like, no, there's not. It doesn't matter. Nothing. It's over. That was the shot. That's too much to overcome. We don't know how to do that. It's over.
The same conversation with my girlfriend on the opposite side of things. It's a long fourth down. She goes, they're going to get it. I'm like, no, they're not. Oh, wait, they did. And it's just this whole thing. Oh, man, I'm sorry. I forgot you were an Arizona State fan. So on that, I do have to ask you then about one of their players who might be on the Bills' radar. I think definitely Bills fans' radar. Jordan Tyson. Marcel, yes. I think he is a wonderful talent, but those medical red flags, I think, should give anyone within the top 15, top 20 a real serious scare.
Yeah, and that was the frustrating thing about watching him play this season. It was just a lot of soft tissue stuff, which, you know, hopefully that can be remedied. You know, I don't know, do some yoga, do some Pilates, do something to strengthen up.
Something.
But, man, when he's on the field and when he's healthy, he's special. And even when he's injured, even when he's banged up, anybody listening to this, if you're curious about Jordan Tyson, I want you to go on YouTube or go wherever, and find footage of Arizona State's final offensive drive against Texas Tech this season. The guy was playing on one hamstring and cooked the best defense in the country by himself. Cooked them. Like, you just knew Sam Leavitt was going to Tyson, and it did not matter. And, like, that's what you want in an alpha. That's what he's capable of. And, you know, I think he's going to be a great player if he can stay healthy. I hope he goes to a good enough situation. He's a good kid, you know, but the medical report, you know, it's probably going to be what holds a lot of teams back, especially with Carnell Tate and that kid from USC on the board.
Kyle Lemon, yeah.
Yeah.
Marcel, last one here for me. Obviously, the Dolphins taking a different identity, going from Mike McDaniel, and then they go to Jeff Hafley here. NFL teams, they do have a tendency to do this where you have the offensive guy, then you go with the defensive guy because that clearly didn't work. The Bills technically did it as well, you know, releasing McDermott, and then they promote their offensive coordinator for this sort of thing. But Hafley coming in here, what are your initial thoughts on the hire there and the direction that Miami needs to go in with Hafley as they begin a new era?
I think it is a return to, like, fundamental football, like a return to the basics here.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think they made such a splashy, it was just such like a Miami thing, like not just Miami Dolphins, but like when you think of the city of Miami, it's flash, it's loud, it's big moves. And like, that's kind of what they did. They hired the flashy coordinator who, I don't want to trivialize him, I think he is a good coach. I think he's a great coach. But, you know, they hired the eight coordinator. They spent big on, you know, the marquee superstar receiver and the big tackle and the fancy corner and this linebacker. Like, they did all of this, and there wasn't a lot of substance to the style. So it never really panned out. I don't think we're going to see a lot of style here. And like, I mean that, I don't mean that to be rude, but like, I think you're just going to get ball now. Like, that's what they're focused on. Their focus is on, I want to play ball. We're going to run the ball. We're going to be physical at the line of scrimmage, which I know everybody says, but like, I kind of think they mean it. I think they mean it. I don't think that you're going to see the same Dolphins football that you saw for the past 4 years. Like, this is going to be, it's not going to be good at first, I don't think, but like, I think it is going to be fundamentally strong. I think it is going to be mentally tough once they get the players in place. Like, it's going to be just the antithesis of what their philosophy was over the past 4 years. And I say all that, obviously not having watched him coach a single game. So I'm trying to be open-minded. I'm not going to put him or pigeonhole him, put him in a box, any of that. But it is a just return to the basics, a return to fundamentals here.
Marcel, thanks so much for jumping on with us here today, especially with you got everything else going on.
Is the water
at
seeing eye level still in that geyser?
Dude, it hasn't even slowed down.
Like, oh, no.
Oh, no.
It's ridiculous. I'm going to just – I'll text it to Zach. I'll text the video to Zach to see if he can hear it. But, like, no, it's the same exact level. There's a news helicopter still above my apartment. My front yard is flooded.
Oh,
right now, even though there's a drain right next door, it's still flooded. This is tough, man.
I think the only thing you can do, kick your feet up, find a show you haven't watched yet that you've been meaning to, and
lock in.
You
can't DoorDash anything, man.
No. Tough no, you're scene. Cooking at home
you're
today.
Cooking.
It's Pizza Lux today.
Oh, yeah.
Pizza Lux.
This is a whole day.
That's exactly what it is. Marcel, man, again, thank you so much for jumping on with us, and we'll talk again soon.
Yep. Sounds good, man.
Marcel Louis-Jacques there on the Western Hotline, ESPN reporter for the Miami Dolphins. I'm telling you, like, that's the
wild
kind of days. You kick your feet up. There's nothing you can do.
There's not. I think the comparable on that would be that November storm. I had to go to class that morning, looked out the window. No, I'm not.
See, I think of...
Went back to bed. 6 a.m., I saw that snow. I went, I ain't going to school.
I think of former Buffalo Mayor Jimmy Griffin of... Not else to do. Six-pack of beer.
Six-pack of beer day.
Go after it. And I mentioned TV show. Like, if you got to catch up on anything, you got time. I mean, I would have taken one step further with Marcel as his wife's getting ready for work. Honey, no. I've got your sweatpants out. You're not going. We're hanging out today.
You're not going. Don't go.
Oh, man. What an experience there. I hope everything's all right.
Yeah, I hope that things get cleaned up pretty quickly there for him.
803-0550, the number two call. We do have a bit of an update here in the Czechia-Canada game. I think Sidney Crosby is still out. However, into the second intermission, it is tied 2-2. Canada had two power plays there in that second period late. They're actually going to be on the power play coming into the third period, but it is tied 2-2. Czechia battling here.
Shots definitely favored Canada in that second period. They found their way to tying this game, and the second period was very much hold on for dear life for Czechia in that one. How do they respond? It's tied after two. Get rid of – you kill this penalty off right away, you get to start the third period on a strong foot. And can you create a next goal win situation against Jordan Binnington?
This is where he makes the big bucks.
It's where he makes the big bucks in terms of Canadian lore right now. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, goaltender matchup is Lucas Doskal and Jordan Binnington. I'd call that relatively on par.
Right. If we're just going on paper, it is not a matchup that you're sitting there going, I mean, you're going to get one pass him. Good luck. It's not that. However, Binnington is in the Canadian sweater, and he is a different beast when that happens. Again, the number to call, 803-0550. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here for another half hour. Brad Ryder and Owen Parker coming up at 1 o'clock. They'll be running 1 to 3 again today. Again, Zach Jones, Derek Kramer. You're listening to The X Point Show on WGR Sports Radio 550, now on 107.7 and 104.7 FM.
As a man, finding a great pair of pants feels harder than it should. Some look sharp but feel stiff. Others are comfortable but wrinkle, stain, or lose their shape by noon. And if you're working, traveling, or constantly on the move, most pants just cannot keep up. That's where Jack Archer comes in.
JackArcher.com delivers one pair of pants designed for real life. Whether it's golf with the guys or date night with someone special, these pants will keep you comfortable and looking polished wherever the day takes you.
That's right, Mark. The Jack Archer Jet Setter Tech Pant is wrinkle-free, stain-resistant, and built to hold its shape all day. With customizable fit options and multiple colors, these are the one pair of pants you'll want to wear every day.
Jack Archer, ready when you are. For a limited time, get 15% off your first order with code GETJACK at jackarcher.com. Again, that's promo code GETJACK at jackarcher.com for 15% off your first order.
Hey, what's up, Flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.